about whether sometimes there can be sort of a framework that fits your latitude in California law. It's a question of fact. It's a specific circumstances in each case. And the parties in the district court focused on specific cases in issue. In that first case, in the subsequent California officials case, and it's the personal services case where the court found the third-party beneficiary status and the citizen and officer defense equal to the unknown suffer. In fact, we argue that it's the personal services case that distinguishes us in a much stronger set of facts on third-party beneficiary status than it does personal services for the reasons identified in the United States Army for opening brief. Here, you have directly placed that to superior compliance to perform the services and where our identity is in the contract formation. My personal services were to handle such a person company, Trinidad, Washington, Virginia. And we define as you have debts to keep your case in all works of development, meaning that it wasn't clear that you didn't have the opportunities that subs were being used. The two cases that you're talking about was under so-called temporal rule. Both some cuts under abuse is found some cut for this court for the proposition. Southern California seems very careful based on this. It has a temporal rule and is not designed in possession. And found it doesn't even involve a certain gender. In addition, it's a full transition. You can work that down in place. The proposed company to be third-party beneficiaries. Superior. So the district court agreed that the
superior or not, is responsible to their contract. But parents have remained entirely liable on the contract. Parents have not obtained a limitation of liability. They did not obtain any disclaimer of warranty. If superior performs the work or commutes any co-parent subcontractors performed strong work, open parents have been found to be vulnerable. And open parents have been extended, negotiated, and agreed that they would have a process to resolve their disputes, including if parents have been held liable for any strong work, any non-performance for repair, and for subcontractors for expenditures. Let me just clear a couple of the other provisions.
Well, some amendments specifically reference this work performed by the SOB Bulls Water, as owned by Superior. Superior's preliminary, right, what was Collins and Collins to do?
Why, Your Honor, I'm just talking about this one. It's any evidence in the record that the Bulls Water is owned by Superior. But even assuming that there's an amendment in the record, right, your job is looking at the terms of the contract, the modified amendments, the contract says, looking at the terms of the contract. And the contract says that co-parents must supply the Bulls Water. That's what happens to the co-parent. The general contract must do that. If it needs to go out and get a contractor to provide that material, let me put it in. I'm going to put it in. I'm trying to put it in more specific terms. You want to remodel your kitchen. If you find a specific general contractor who's going to do all of your tile work, your appliances, and everything, it's not going to be very, very specific care for your funds. And so you say, Mr. Smith, this construction general contractor, I want to give you my general contractor, but under no circumstances can you use any care and paper other than my care and paper that you use. You need to go out and hire him. You better want that care and paper to keep the wood, to pick the thing, the furnishing, to do all the construction, to install the kitchen. It's not going to be possible. But the general contractor is on the contract. The general contractor and the owner of the project. And the contractor, even though by law, I need to get that paper to be the one to provide my cabinets, doesn't mean that my contract with the general contractor is benefiting the subcontractor with the cabinet maker. If anything, it's the reverse. If the cabinet maker's project is my general contractor, that goes to my benefit. Right? So the law is,
it seems to me, counsel, that you're urging us to limit ourselves only to the plain language of the main contract. But I think you've already conceded that it should be on the application of one case versus the other. It should be ordinary contract interpretation rules that are counseled in law. And so we look to the circumstances under which the parties of the main contract scheme is occurring as they did. And the industry, including, for example, looking to the level of construction of language in the contract, but looking to, for example, evidence that had been contested and superior to the court.
There's no evidence of failure. The owner is considered an owner. It's how you read this. Your entire analysis is submitted to the question. So it's the right board that
those proposals be submitted below the declaration that the district court is considered. It may determine that it's there, and look to the declaration that it was there by the vice president and general counsel. The declaration talks a lot about that, and in that sense, it was superior directly voiced here to the court. But for a rule of law, that's why Congress was brought in, so we look at that declaration because your argument is still saying,
yes, for two reasons. One, the district court did not abuse her discretion under the errors in some of the fiduciary rulings. Start with that version. She did not abuse her discretion in seeking those declarations. I think that all even those declarations are considered, they are irrelevant. The question is not superior's intent. The question is commitment and appearance of intent. And the law, Civil Code Section 1639, says the intention of the parties is to be ascertained from the writing alone. If possible, and here, the intent of the parties absolutely is to keep from this contract between O'Carroll and Independent, which is the only contract that matters.
Here, when you keep the evidence in the record, what you are asking me about is that if the rule of law permits the contract to be torn to the superior?
I don't know anything about Superior. There's no evidence in the record about Superior, whether or not there's a marriage that they have affected with Superior or not. I just don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I don't know at all the law. I don't know. But what I do know is that for business reasons, you can do this in contract with your parent and only your parent. That's the only question. And as to your question, there's a categorical rule. There's not a categorical rule, but I would posit there's every single case that is deciding the issue of whether a general contract, a prime contract, is intended to compromise. Do those parties intend to keep the parent set of benefits of contract or intended? And so, no. So the Southern California Exclusive Case says no. The contract is not an intended beneficiary of the main contract. Even if it would have gone some instead of benefit of the PA. And contrary to counsel's suggestion that nobody's ever signed the Southern California, they're wrong. Counsel cited it for the main of their brief to cases that have been in Southern California.
What's your view into the
So intended benefit, beneficiary, I'll give you an example. The Clarity case discusses, and there's many examples where a party married to the Clarity case has a contract between a HP, a business practice, HP, and a buyer of a company where HP, one of the contracting parties, specifically negotiated that the new buyer of the company would provide certain benefits to end results of HP's employees, including not firing them, not laying them off. If they did fire in there, you give them a few years for the severance, those kinds of benefits. There's no particular employee in mind. There was no specific employment agreement about the negotiations between the seller and the buyer of the company. Buyer of the company, I mean, if you say it's all the employees, it doesn't give them the severance that HP agrees. In your case, those parties, the two contracting parties that specifically can define the benefits being incurred to the third party. In the construction context, so this is a case of which is cited in the briefs. It's really directly on point from the main cases 232, Cal 38, 1991 case, where the court specifically said there's certain identical matches, only there's two levels. A general contractor hired a subcontractor to perform a certain part of the contract. The subcontractor was not licensed to do work in Utah, which was required. So the parties entered into that contract knowing that subcontractor would have to stop subcontractor out that work, and that that subcontractor did all of the work if some subcontractor was licensed to Utah. So that was the plan. So what the court said, the subcontractor is not an intended third party beneficiary of the main contract to affirm the contract. Well, one, an urgent bond, you cannot affirm, because the facts are in dispute. There are no facts. Superior fails entirely because it's burden to prove that it has a right to compel arbitration and it didn't. It submitted no evidence of intent or appearance of intent. And if it believed it or not, that was what appearance of intent it may have. A negotiation of appearance of intent could have found a declaration. And let me just back up for a moment. I think that there's some concern on this point that this poor party is not being paid for something that it did. But Superior had an enforceable agreement with the parent to see that any of the money that it thinks that it's owed, it had submitted its invoices, and it had a specific dispute resolution provision that it took advantage of. It actually brought a claim against the parent. It's funny that this court has been asked to force into arbitration. It has already been resolved. Superior has a contract with the parent. Superior took advantage of that contract with the parent. Superior submitted a notice of claim to a parent. Superior submitted an arbitration demand on the parent. The parties engaged in that process, pursuant to their contract, and resolved the claim. It is over. It's over. The parties left for whatever reason, no parent turned in, Superior settles that finding. But it doesn't allow Superior to keep inquiring around the contract and come under the main contract. Senator Popple, your case, you said that. Lundin said that. The other case that superior side of it, but it made an unpublished decision that the pros should be paid.
What about the society issue?
The international issue is so much more straightforward. First of all, there's no clear obstacles to which they're prepared to decide any of the rest of it or the country goes to the right. The main contract is the very same thing
Thank you.